Hello, everyone out there in podcast land, and welcome to another episode for the Front Row Network. No, you are not mistaken. This is Flashback, and we are returned from the grave.
What?
Flashback. Yes, we are back. You know, life happens. I did a lot of adulting over the past year, but hey, I'm ready to slow down and hop back in, so super excited. What great time to come back, better than, you know, October horror movies. So let's pay homage to one of the greatest horror movies ever, for one of the greatest franchises ever. But I think I'll keep with tradition and do Scott's famous little thing.
Yeah.
Somewhere between The Last House on the Left and My Soul to Take, there are a couple of decades of movies that define a generation. And for many, they are classics, but for everybody, they are flashbacks. And today we are talking about a horror movie from the mind of one of the greats, Wes Craven, a movie that celebrates its 25th anniversary, Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Wow, I can't believe this movie is 25 years old. That just makes me feel very, very old.
25 years to the day. Kind of crazy, kind of nuts. I remember watching this movie way back when. But before we get into first impressions, let's just break it down what this movie is all about. Wes Craven's New Nightmare is the seventh installment of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. In it, actress Heather Langenkamp lives a normal life with son Dylan and special effects husband Chase. But she soon begins to experience nightmares that include a villain from her past movie roles. As events unfold that blur the line between reality and fiction, she discovers there's a demonic force pursuing her. And that demonic force is something that can be trapped in storytelling. The latest story it was trapped in, none other than Heather Langenkamp's tour de force performance in A Nightmare on Elm Street, and that demon is none other than Freddy Krueger. And this demon likes being Freddy. Well, as the 90s came around, Freddy Part 6, Freddy's Dead, ended the story of Nightmare on Elm Street, and this evil wants out. It wants to cross over into to our world, but it's scared of something, and that thing is Heather. And so it starts to come after Heather and target something that Heather holds dear, her family. So Heather must make a choice if she is willing to play the gatekeeper, Nancy, the person that destroyed Freddy in the first round of Nightmare movies. And her hand is forced as Dylan is taken by Freddy in you can edit that out. Sorry. So, yeah, there's the synopsis. So, first impressions, what do you remember about this movie when you first saw it, Jeremy?
You know, the thing about this movie when I first saw it was, I mean, obviously I was younger, so it was pretty scary. And I think this might have been the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie I've seen. Because, you know, obviously, you know, I was young enough where my mom wouldn't let me, you know, watch any horror film I wanted to watch. But this was one that I remember being very big at the time, and that, you know, you went out of your way to go find this at Blockbuster or wherever. And yeah, if that didn't date us as well, beyond recognition. But I do remember the, you know, just being very terrified by the visuals in this movie, especially like, you know, giant Freddy in the clouds. That always kind of freaked me out. But also just remembering that the appearance, this being my first look at Freddy Krueger, just a terrifying iteration of this character, very, very much so. And now that with the benefit of hindsight and knowing, you know, the other Nightmare on Elm Street films, just how much like more scary they pumped up the makeup on Freddy Krueger in this film. He looks so demonic and so just so much more terrifying. And they even make mention of that, the characters in the film. But and also, though, just you remember just the meta-ness of it all and how Wes Craven, again, with the kind of the advent of future looking, is going to continue down that path in just a few short years after this film. You know, it really is, I think, the most crisply made Nightmare on Elm Street film. It looks the best of all of them. And I think that, you know, if you wanted to tell me this was your favorite, I wouldn't look at you too sideways. I still think the first one's the masterpiece, but this one's pretty up there, especially in the realm of like the original like seven films.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, when I first remember, one of my first memories in seeing this is the fact that I saw it on VHS.
Right.
I'm going to say that again. VHS.
That's a video home cassette, people.
But no, I would go over to my friend's house and I would watch this movie. And I remember just thinking, like, this is so cool how they're taking this idea of filmmaking and including it in bringing Freddy to life. And what makes it really unique to the story is that, it's like a genie in the bottle.
Yeah.
And they say that in the film is, you know, the movies have ended. This force wants to get out, but it wants to be Freddy.
Yeah.
So with it being Freddy, it's like, holy crap.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, the... Obviously, the thing that endures the most about this film is the meta-ness of it, because now we've seen this happen a bunch of times in pop culture now, most recently with the new BH90210 show, where, you know, the actors are playing themselves in a fictionalized version of our real world. And that is in and of itself really cool because, you know, again, like after watching, you know, after a few years, you know, like we're around like in college after I'd seen the other Nightmare on Elm Streets. And once I, you know, kind of had an appreciation for the characters and the people playing them, like it was so cool to go back and watch this and see how like Robert Englund like portrays himself in this movie and to see like just how much fun he's having not only as himself in this, but also as this new iteration of Freddy Krueger that is even in, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but is even more sinister and is even more diabolical than his previous version of Freddy in this. And so you see a legacy that comes out of that of now it's like kind of an in vogue thing to do to like, you know, play yourself, but not really play yourself type thing. I just found that so, so appealing on these second watches.
Yeah, you know, and you know, speaking of my first impressions going back to it is, you know, as a kid I really liked the whole filmmaking aspect, but with that whole blurred reality and the whole meta aspect, of course I was 8 years old, had no idea what that was.
Right.
You're sitting there like, this is genuinely scary. Like, what if something were to go wrong on a movie set, or what if something, you know, used something to come forth? I don't, it, you know, for an 8 year old you're just like, holy crap, this is scary.
Yeah.
Let's just, we've already talked, we're starting to go into likes. So tell me something that you liked about this movie. I know I've got my likes. So what's one thing that stands out that you really, really like about this film?
Yeah. What I like is that it's trying to play in a deeper sandbox than slasher films had even been allowed to play in, at this time, in Hollywood. It's trying to go after ideas of pure evil and, what, you know, that means and how it manifests itself and how all of us finds the strength there. That's something that's a lot more philosophical than a horror film, especially a horror film in the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise at that point was probably allowed to make a point about that. But in this, I mean, you see also though, just like with that regard, I just love seeing that these actors are willing to revisit this material. You know, so oftentimes actors can run away from roles that define them or typecast them in certain ways. But in this one, I love that we just kind of go whole hawk into it. You know, like Heather Langenkamp is doing some great work here. Kind of probably in a little bit of a life imitating art role for her too. I mean, I imagine that in her career, she's probably ruminated on this role, and how it's, you know, helped or hurt her career. And to see that, and I, you know, from what I'm told, Robert Englund is also just very into Freddy, for his entire career. Like that's very much tracking with what he is in like in real life. But I just love that it's playing in that deeper sandbox. You know, we're dealing with a lot of different philosophical things about art and about personal responsibility and about personal strength, and even how one grieves in this movie, especially in regard to Heather's husband. So, I mean, it's not shallow, this one. We're getting into some really deep stuff in this one.
No, and that's – I mean, I'm glad I let you go first because this goes right into what I want to talk about is the realism. The realism in this film, during the time that they were filming in 1994, there was an actual earthquake, and this film uses that earthquake right. as part of the storytelling. And what's awesome is if you really think about it, you know, the lines between reality and fiction are blurring and they're almost breaking, and they're breaking because of this earthquake. So they really use that for the storytelling. It helps push the story because every time that this entity as Freddy is trying to break out of the fictional world, there's an earthquake, whether it's in something that Heather just feels or that the whole, you know, LA area feels. It's just amazing how they can spin that. You know, obviously Wes Craven had had this idea, but for him to use that and harness it to make his story more real is something beyond exception. What I also enjoyed is Heather Langenkamp actually had a stalker, and Wes had approached her to actually use that for her story. So in the story, she has a stalker, someone who calls and sends her letters, literal letters, not like, you know, oh, dear Heather. it turns out to be Freddy trying to, you know, basically play a psychological game with her. This movie is not just a horror movie. It is a psychological mind twist because of how real it feels. You know, from the stalker to literally playing psychological warfare, this entity as Freddy is breaking down Heather so that way when he does battle with her, she is completely weakened. But like you said, personal strengths, she becomes the role of Nancy and really fulfills those shoes and becomes stronger. She's always been strong. She just didn't realize it until she realized that, hey, I am strong.
Yeah, and it's also just seeing how they used all the other original Nightmare actors as well, like the guy who played her father. I'm blanking on the actor's name, but
John Saxon.
Yeah, there you go. And like how he's there at the funeral, you know, like he's there with her and trying to help her out in a difficult time. And then once the line starts blurring completely, he just completely goes into Nancy's dad mode. And that's a psychological craziness there, you know, like that's something that you can't quite like wrap your head around in the moment. And it's a great way to, you're right, like kind of get into that philosophical part of this. And what I love most about this too is that when you remember at this time, like, do you remember like what Freddy Krueger was before this movie came out in pop culture? He was kind of sort of a joke now, you know,
he was a comedian.
Yeah. He was a comedian. They had like a freaking like Tales from the Crypt anthology show with him where he's like joking with the audience. Like that's not what Freddy Krueger is. Like, you know, like, so I really love like, especially looking back in the guise of horror history, especially with Freddy Krueger, man, they finally remembered what Freddy Krueger was, which was just this terrifying wraith of an entity that you should not find humor in. You should be terrified of every single possible aspect of this guy.
Right. And, you know, that's another thing that I like is this vision that we get of Freddy is the definitive vision that Wes Craven had all along. This is what he wanted. You know, obviously back then, special effects weren't as good as they were. We did get a decent, scary looking Freddy, but this Freddy is what Wes Craven, I dare say, had nightmares of. You know, Wes Craven is known for having nightmares, and that's how he gets a lot of his scripts or his ideas. He'll read something. I believe the original concept for Nightmare One was the Khmer Rouge massacre, and people were just so shell shocked that they just couldn't sleep.
Right.
And then they ended up dying in their sleep. So I think Wes had a nightmare about that, and that's how Freddy was born. But the fact that he finally was able to give us this, I mean, Wes has been involved in three films. He directed two. He wrote the third. He did not direct the third. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he was able to end with this one before it went into the realm of, you know, franchise, back to the realm of let's get money for franchise with Freddy versus Jason, the eventual remake. But I just kind of like that definitive, this is it. You know, you had Freddy's dead, but now this is the new nightmare. So.
Yeah, and that was like – and you're right. Like I got to call out the makeup effects here because you're right. Like, you know, the original Freddy makeup is terrifying. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a dude who's almost burnt to a crisp that's got these knives for fingers chasing you around in your dreams so you can't sleep. That's pretty unfair. But at the same time – this one just looks so much more demonic, you know, like just the way that the burns are kind of like sunken into his face even more, so that there's kind of like these little strips of skin that like kind of make out.
It's
like
raw skin.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely just, oh man, it's a much, and I love that. Like I said, they say that in the movie, you know, like I think, it's either when Heather's talking with Robert or with Wes, where they say, you know, like, you know, he's scarier this time. Like he doesn't look like Freddy. You know, he looks a lot worse now.
Well, let's talk about the acting in this movie, because you're right. That's exactly when it happened, is when she's on the phone with Robert Englund and he's doing the painting, and the painting is just creepy beyond all definition.
Which, yes, people, just, Robert Englund is a painter in real life.
Yes, yes. But he asks her, he goes, oh, you have a dream, you're dreaming of me. And he goes, no, not you, someone darker,
yeah,
more scary. And he, you know, Robert just kind of takes over from there and starts describing in words as he's painting. And it's just the red tones. And then it pulls away and you just see this Freddy that's just like, I don't know. But Robert Englund.
It's absolutely Robert Englund, terrifying.
Yes. Yeah, some of his, you know, Robert Englund, God love him. You know, he's one of the best horror actors out there. He's been in so many different horror movies. He's just like a horror cliche. But I think Wes Craven's New Nightmare, he was able to pull something off that he wasn't able to do in other Nightmare movies. That's a play himself, but play a demon.
Yeah.
A literal demon.
No, absolutely. And that's what I loved about like the dichotomy of that, of him in this movie too, is that the very first time we see him, he's doing the comedian Freddy thing, you know, like he's on that talk show with Heather and he's going around high-fiving people dressed as Freddy in the stands, and, you know, he's like saying like, ah, oh, let's do lunch and stuff like that. And you know, and then like we get this great conversation with him and Heather where they're talking about like, you know, like doing like romantic comedies and other stuff, like trying to do different kind of roles. And Robert Siller said that he's just like, well, why can't it be romantic and have a little guts in it too? You know, like, and it's just like, you got to see, I think, the charming side of Robert Englund that people don't really get to see unless you like, you know, see him at cons or see footage of interviews or something like that. He's a ridiculously charming individual. And I love that he got to do that. But then you're right. Like this version of Freddy is literally, I mean, I think you're right. It's what Wes and he probably wanted to do with the original one all along. But this is probably like, you know, a better way for him to go, because he got to play such vastly different versions of himself in this.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his work from just the two alone, just 1 and 7 at Wes Craven's New Nightmare. I mean, they're almost similar, but he's more defined in 7. Yeah. Like he's even sinister in the first one, but he's more defined in this one. And we don't really see a whole lot of Freddy. I think we see less of Freddy in this one than we did in the first one, yeah. Which makes it even better.
You know, absolutely.
He's that unseen force. So, you know, you talked about all the actors that are came back, and, you know, we're still talking about the cast in this movie. Heather Langenkamp nails it. Let's talk for a second about the person that played her son, Miko Hughes. The kid terrifies me, man. You know, the only thing that he didn't terrify me in was Full House.
Well, he's pretty terrifying in Full House, too, if you think about it. He's just running around pinching Michelle like it's nothing. No. If I'm being honest with you, this is kind of one of my gripes about the movie, because I don't like the performance that much. Because it's just
for
like,
him.
Yeah, because like at the very beginning, like it's like before anything has even happened, he's sitting there like being as creepy as possible. And I'm just like, so like, is this just like how this kid is? Like, is this just how he is in life? Because that's not good. That's not good for Heather. Like, you know, that I feel bad for her and her husband. Like, you know, this kid's kind of really weird. How do you even gauge when he's acting under Freddy's influence? But, you know, I don't want to be the critic that's like, this movie sucks because of a kid. I mean, like, he's fine. He serves the purpose he's supposed to serve, which is basically, you know, the cannon fodder, that they're the kid in front of the cannon that, you know, has to be the motivation. But, yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of one of my gripes about this movie. I don't really like this kid.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can totally get behind that, because it's almost like it's overplayed, you know, the mean old man with the claws, you know, yeah. It's like, I, and here's one of my big gripes is the whole Hansel and Gretel side tale. Like, to me, it just didn't really work. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the alliteration with, you know, genie out of the bottle, and of course you think Aladdin or anything Arabian Nights, but Hansel and Gretel, you know, it just didn't work for me. But it's this whole idea of this kid needs something to believe in order for him to get back from a nightmare. Right. This isn't his battle. It's his mother's battle. So it should be Heather's way of getting back, not the kids. But I guess it's in essence, it's a way for him to reach out, and I guess it works for the movie. But it makes me rub my head every time I see the movie.
Yeah, it's a little much there. But another thing that I loved about this movie is the callbacks that we get to the first one, specifically the kill in the hospital room.
The babysitter.
Yes, which is a direct correlation to the first film. I can't remember the character's name, but her boyfriend having to watch her get climbed up all over the walls and gutted, like pinned to the ceiling and stuff. And I mean, again, you get to see Freddy at his most terrifying there, like, you know, this unseen thing that you can't do anything to help the person that you want to help. Like, that's about as sinister as it gets, you know. And I thought that was especially good, a good way to pay homage to the first film in a brand new way.
Yeah, that kill was good. I mean, of course, you have the rotating room, you know, that Billy Eilish, I guess, is bringing back.
Right.
but I mean, that's something that that Wes brought back. Of course, you're referring to when Tina gets killed in the first film. And Wes did that. He brought a rotate, and it was completely innovative, and it was just shock value. Now, for me, you know, I love gore in my horror movies, and the first one had so much in this kill, just this kill alone, not Johnny Depp getting sucked in the bed, you know. And I think they tamed it down a little bit because, you know, they're already doing a lot with making Freddy scarier and things like that. But in my honest opinion, this will be one of my gripes later, is I think the production budget for gore kind of went out on this movie. They spent so much on the makeup of Freddy and the glove that everything else kind of went the wayside. But I really enjoyed the callback, because just seeing what's great about that scene is when he's standing on the ceiling, Freddy is, he just looks like a towering menace, and it's just, it's scary. He's huge compared to everything else. I don't know how they made that work, but the fact like he's bent over is just scary.
No. You're absolutely right. I mean, like, every single time he gets to do his thing in this, it is way more terrifying than I ever thought it would be. And I think you're right that they toned down the blood aspect of it specifically, because I think they wanted this one, the studio did, wanted this one to be a mass appeal horror film. And of course, those, you know, at that time, you know, you really kind of had to skimp a little bit on the gore aspect of it. Otherwise, it was going to be in danger of like the old NC-17 rating or something like that.
Right.
You lose out on a whole swath of your potential filmgoers there. Not that, you know, R isn't a serious rating anyway, but, you know, at that time in cinemas and stuff, they didn't really care if, you know, teenagers got into those R-rated movies. I mean, it's a amazing scare, and you're right to call out how Freddy looks there with the towering aspect of it. And you're right, he's wearing that coat as well. That's just like, I don't know why that makes it even more menacing to me, but it's just like, this demon that's killing my babysitter, and he's got a good fashion sense. but yeah. And I also really do like, though, you know, even though it might have skimped on the gore aspect of it, I did like the production value of Freddy's like lair at the end. I thought that was especially more terrifying than, you know, just the boiler room sets that we had gotten in the previous six films.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. You know, that, I mean, that's Freddy's world. That's the realm that this demon has created, and so it's just so unique. You see like the seven deadly sins, but there's also warehouses for when the creation of Freddy was, you know, started with the killing in the boiler room. I mean, it's just, it's dark. It's great. I don't know what else to say about it.
No, yeah, it's really fantastic.
Yeah. You know, but one of my other gripes, Greg Nicotero, Walking Dead, one of the big guys when it comes to special effects and horror, you know, he was almost, I would almost say a nobody, but I mean, he was working. He wasn't as big of a name as he was now. But just some of the things in the movie, like you said, production, you know, you're not going to get away from the green screen in the freeway scene, or, you know, Fred in the clouds. That was okay. My thing is like when the editing there, when he's on the road, when Dylan is being chased, he's running towards that green fence, and yet you see these Freddy dummies coming up. Mm-hmm. They look awful. They look awful.
No, it's not good. The freeway scene. Oh boy. Aside from giant God Freddy in the clouds, that's at least a cool visual. But yeah, the green screen is not well done in that scene.
No,
it's something Sarah and I, when we last watched it, we were just like, oh man, yep, there it is. That's the rushed effect shot that every movie has to have.
Yep. And just, the practical effect and the editing, you know, you have the kid in the center is this green, basically tarp separating flow of traffic going, you know, east and west, and the kid's running towards it. And yet you see all the Freddy kids or all the Freddy dummies coming at him. You're like, why is he running towards it?
Yeah. It makes no sense.
Oh, well,
these are the good Freddies.
Right. Patrick Lesser, who is a longtime collaborator with Wes Craven, he would go on to do Dracula 2000. He got better with time. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we are going to leave it at that.
Just real quick, another gripe that I have, and I don't know if you've heard this story, you may have, but at that funeral scene, we see so many people that had a hand in the Nightmare series. You know, you've got Tuesday Night, she was in Friday 3 or 4, or not Friday, Nightmare 3 or 4. You see the guy who played Tina's boyfriend. I don't know his name. Right. You see John Saxon, who, of course, plays the dad. You see Robert Englund. You see Marion Magdala, who was the producer. You see Sarah Reiser. You see Wes. You see all these people. And, of course, Johnny Depp is missing. Well, now, yeah. The story goes that Wes had saw Johnny after this was done. And he goes, you know, I was thinking about asking you to do this cameo, and I just didn't do it with your busy schedule. And Johnny goes, you should have. I would have been there in a heartbeat, because this was Johnny Depp's first movie. I don't know if you knew that story.
I didn't know the story about the funeral. No, like I because that would have been very, very cool.
Johnny Depp said he would have been here in a heartbeat, and he just, I guess Wes Craven was just too scared to ask him. So I really wish that.
Yes, because Johnny Depp is Johnny frickin' Depp at that point.
Right. In 1994, you know, you got Edward Scissorhands. But it's like, you know, you gave this kid his career and he just didn't ask. So it would have made the movie more complete, in my opinion. I don't know, just a cameo from Johnny Depp. Call me, I don't know, whatever. But I just think it would have tied more with the reality aspect of it, because Heather and Johnny are actually good friends from what I've read.
Okay.
So yeah. One more thing that I forgot to add just in my likes is the preparation for the final battle. You get that last transition from reality to fiction. It's where Heather says, I love you too. And Freddie's standing on the bed ready to go. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she says, daddy, he realizes that they're going to do battle and he can step into our reality. I think that's the coolest imagery ever.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was perfect. And I can't believe I forgot to talk about it earlier, but I just think that that scene always sticks out with me, because the music, the editing, the acting, it's just so awesome. And of course, when Heather turns around and bam, we get it. We get Freddy's house from the original Nightmare, and it's so iconic. So
yeah,
I can't believe that earlier. So
no, that you are. I've got nothing to add to that. That is absolutely spectacular. The last gripe that I will say, and again, this is kind of probably nitpicky, but Wes, you are an amazing director, my man. Not an amazing actor. I'm sorry. I don't want to speak ill of the dead.
No, I agree with you 100%.
But that scene was pretty painful to watch. I mean, he's given us great information, but it's so dry. It is so dry.
He was almost better in the first scene when he's talking about.
He was great in the first scene.
When he's talking about, oh yeah, great blood, you know?
Yeah, Chase, that was fantastic. I was like, oh, cool, it's Wes. That's cool.
It was great. It's like he was in his element, but then he's trying to explain the you know, backstory of this demon. And you're like, dramatic acting is not for you.
He's like, I felt sorry for Heather because I'm like, oh man, she's doing great stuff here. And Wes is just like, yes, it's evil.
Come on, man. It's trying to get out.
That having been said, we love you, man. We miss you a ton.
We miss you. Yep. It's funny because I just watched Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back because Jay and Bob Reboot comes out tomorrow. And Wes Craven is in there spoofing Scream.
Yeah.
Same acting.
Yeah, exact same acting. You know, that is, my favorite director cameo in that, though, is definitely Gus Van Sant.
Counting his money. Yep. Yeah.
Jesus, Matt, I'm busy.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's talk impact of this film. I mean, well, this is a flashback. This movie turns 25 years old today. So let's just talk about, you know, not just this movie, but the franchise as a whole and its lasting legacy. So just break down what you think about the Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, franchise and, of course, its legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, obviously, Freddy is one of the big Mount Rushmore movie monsters there with or at least, you know, modern movie monsters with Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers. And honestly, like, you know, the first one, Freddy's always been the most terrifying to me because the power base is just not fair
right.
I mean, it's just like you can't sleep. And then, like, once you do, like, you know, there's hardly any recourse for you in the midst of that dream world because he controls it completely. So I was always most terrified of Freddy Krueger. And even when, you know, it started turning into more of a joke and stuff, it still just got me so much that this guy could just get you at your most vulnerable and there's literally nothing you can do about it. And so with this one, though, bringing it finally back into the realm of something that truly terrified me and truly got me, you know, it kind of was a little disappointing to see it go back to the hokey with Freddy versus Jason, but I understand why that movie happened. You know, that was more of a fan service film than anything. But I do like, though, that you know, and especially in terms of the new remake, the Jackie Earle Haley one had its problems, but at least it still tried to capture that vibe of Freddy Krueger and that terrifying aspect of what would you even try to do if you found out that this was something that existed and that you couldn't, you know, no matter what you do, you are doomed here. And so I think the lasting impact of that, though, is just like you look at all of those terrifying wraith-like creatures that come out now. I mean, like without Freddy Krueger, I don't think you get like an Oculus or a Babadook or anything like that, you know.
Right.
These are entities that you don't fully understand, but that have this immense power that you need to be terrified of.
Absolutely, 100% agree. You know, the franchise as a whole, you know, and its legacy. You've got movies, you've got TV shows, you've got them in Mortal Kombat.
Right.
I mean, Freddy is just. Right. Freddy is just this representation of evil. You know, like you said, he is the Mount Rushmore. I call it the unholy trinity.
Yeah.
The Father, the Son, unholy ghost.
The unholy ghost, yeah.
And the unholy ghost would be Freddy. The Father would be Michael Myers. He started slashers.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the Son, Jason Voorhees. But the fact that, you know, you have this ghost, you know, the other two, you know, they're forces. But this one is – Freddy is – a different type of evil because it can come at you when you're most vulnerable. And that's what makes him so scary because you can't control whether you have a good dream or a bad. And that's what makes Freddy so creepy is that he can just prey on your fears because when you're mind, you're thinking of things that you don't know that you're thinking about and he can feed off of that.
Yeah.
You know, but going on, you know, the franchise as a whole, number two just tried to do more of the dark stuff and it just didn't work out. And then three, which I really enjoyed, which had Heather Langenkamp and John Saxon reprising their roles from the original Nightmare.
Right.
Three was actually outstanding for me. I really liked three. But that's when you started getting into the hokiness, the jokes.
Yeah, you start getting into the Dream Warriors and all that kind of stuff. And,
yep.
And it's just, I mean, and again, it's not that you can't enjoy those movies. Like, you know, like,
right.
but it's such a steep departure from what we've expected from it, you know? And I mean, look, it's not the only one. I mean, Halloween and Friday the 13th, both of them did the same thing. You know, you get too far in and you just naturally kind of lose the luster on it, and you know, the sheen wears off and you just kind of go for more laughs and more shock factor. And you know, those, right. And I will say, I mean, of all of those franchises, even when it went hokey, I think Freddy at least still kept the cake for the most inventive kills of any of those guys.
Right. I could argue Jason Voorhees. I mean, he gets pretty crafty.
He does, man. He punches a dude's head off in New York City. I mean, what more do you want?
But I mean, it's just, you just look back and it's just, the other two don't talk, but this one does. So, you know, the humor almost worked for him, but it really downgraded his scariness. You know, yeah, you can be scared of him because he can kill you in your dreams when you're vulnerable, but he also likes to make jokes. Like me and my friends joke all the time. Just in the Dungeon and Dragons kill, as we call it, from Nightmare 3.
Right.
I'm the wizard master. And Freddy just grabs him and goes, I don't believe in fairy tales, kid, and just dices him. Yeah. Like, and the kid's like, ow!
Ah.
It's like, okay, we've gone on to the realm of hokiness.
Yeah.
So it's upsetting, but
well,
I guess
turned into a whole stereotype in and of itself, you know, like the one-liner before you kill him, you know, like you get this whole stand-up comedy routine all of a sudden as well before you die. So I guess at least you get to laugh before you're gutted.
Right. So I guess it, for what it is and how it developed, I guess it worked for Nightmare.
And a quick question for you, good sir, though, like all three of these Holy Trinities have been remade. What do you think is the best of them?
The best of the remakes?
Yes. And I know that is, you know, I'm definitely not asking you which is good because, well, they all have very big problems. But if we had to choose one.
My question to you is this: which remake of Halloween are you talking? Are you talking Rob Zombie?
I'm going to say Rob Zombie because the Seth Graham Green one last year was that was a continuation
of the
first one. So I would say the Rob Zombie Halloweens, the Jack Earl Haley Nightmare, and of course the for lack of a better term, Jared Padalecki Friday the 13th.
The Derek Myers. Okay, so here's my thing. So I liked what Rob Zombie did with the backstory of Michael Myers, but we didn't need it.
Yep.
So that one's out. Nightmare on Elm Street, what they did, I think the original intent for Freddy was to be a child murderer, not a child molester. And
right.
It kind of developed into that with others. So the remake kind of took that on, and I think that was a bad move in regard to – it should have just played on to child killer because that's a little bit more creepy. Now it's hard to say child creepy, child molester. It's still the same thing. My thing is the one that paid true homage to everything that the original set up for would have been Friday the 13th.
Okay.
In the sense that the kills were genuine to Jason. Now it didn't show that, you know, Friday the 13th was Jason's mom the whole time. Well, I mean, they had to work with what they had. And I think from a remake standpoint, Friday the 13th did the best out of what we were given. So what do you think out of the three?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, it's definitely a trog between Nightmare and Friday the 13th for me as well. Because you're right. Like, I have the exact same problem with the Rob Zombie film. Also, aside from like, I like Rob Zombie's movies, don't get me wrong, but sometimes he just goes to Rob Zombie in certain scenes.
Yep, I agree with you 100%.
He's got a great feel for the genre. He's got a great feel for what's terrifying and scary. But at times, like, it's just like, I don't need the 15th cuss word in that scene where a family's eating breakfast. You know, I don't need
it.
So at that point, it just becomes distracting. But I will agree with you. And I like the Friday the 13th remake. I mean, look, I'm a huge Supernatural fan, so I've got a soft spot for Jared Padalecki. But I did like that they also made, like, you know, fornicating teens a big part of it, you know, because let's face it, that's what Jason Voorhees is, you know.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, so there's a lot of sex in that movie, and that's kind of what draws him up there. But I did like the look of that film. That was kind of when Michael Bay started producing some of these horror films as well. I think it was the same company that did Nightmare. The thing that might push it to Nightmare for me is that I think Jackie Earle Haley is really good in that movie. I think he is very, very good as Freddy Krueger. It's almost impossible for me to even try to say that, but you know, they cut some such a different version of Freddy in this. And I just think Jackie Earle Haley is that kind of a caliber of an actor. And the, as much as I like the kind of general hokiness of the Friday the 13th remake, I just think that, you know, like, you got a caliber of an actor as Jackie Earle Haley playing your villain here. And I think that's what pushes me to it.
Yeah, and that's what I would have to agree with you on, is the only good thing about The Nightmare are the two leads. Rooney Mara, yeah, as that strong woman, strong teenage fighter, and then you have Jack Earl Haley as Freddy. I mean, his, even when he's running from the parents, yeah, I mean, just the look on his face, I mean, that's pure emotion through what he's doing, and it's really good, yeah, you know. But again, I just, the twists and turns they tried to do, and it's, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, also, like, I just love it, though, because, like, and this gets back into this film, too, is just, like, the reality-warping powers of Freddy are always the more terrifying thing to me, you know? Like, the killer, like, Jason Voorhees as a force coming after you, fine, yes, that's obviously terrifying, but just the fact that you can't even tell what's real around you with Freddy, that's kind of what's there. And, you know, if you want more on that, look forward to our Oculus podcast here on Monster Cast, because we'll be talking a lot about that.
There you go, good plug. Yeah. So we're just about ready to wrap up, but before we go, I want to know, Jeremy, what your rankings are, and then I'll give my rankings, because we already talked about how I love this film. I want to know your rankings of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. What are your rankings?
Okay, so are we going from top to bottom, or are we going from bottom to top?
Let's go bottom to top.
Oh, good. I get to go schlocky first. And I'm assuming we're talking just these seven, right? We're not talking Freddy versus Jason or the remake. Or do you want to?
Okay, let's go.
Because I've got a pretty clear pick for the lowest of that, but...
Okay, let's go. Let's include anything that had Freddy Krueger in terms of film.
Films.
Go ahead.
Okay. My bottom, I think I'm going to have to go with The Dream Child. I just really, really couldn't. That one kind of killed me inside.
Okay.
I know I probably hurt a lot of people's feelings there. Number four, I think, would be my next one. Again, it's hard for me to just like talk about like, here's why I don't like these. I mean, they are what they are, you know. This is all just personal preference at this point. Then I would go with six. I'd go with the Final Nightmare, I think that was called, that one. So I'd go, yeah, 5, 4, 6. I think I would put then the remake with Jackie Earle Haley right there.
Okay.
Then I would go with Freddy versus Jason. And I know that that's really weird for me to say, but God, I love how bonkers that movie is. You know, cause I was just like, I'm just turning my brain off like in the first 5 minutes of that film, and I'm just going to enjoy the ride. Actually, you know what? No, I'm switching that in the remake. Okay. There. So the next, then I'm going with Freddy versus Jason. Then I'm going with the remake. Then I'm going to go with, Freddy 2. I'm going to go with Freddy's Revenge. Then I'll hit number three, because I agree with you. I think that one's actually very, very good. And then I'm going to go New Nightmare and then the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay. All right. So sticking true to the original, kudos. I mean, we'll talk after I tell you mine.
There you go.
So mine, obviously, bottom of the spectrum, number five. At that point, they are really stretching to find ways to make Freddy work, and bringing a baby into it is just too much. Then I'm going to say six, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. They tried to go, you know, past backstory, and at the end, it was a muddled mess.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to say two. I never really liked two. I just, you know, you have such a good one with the original. I think that the second one with the whole possession thing, it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to say, remake, just because I think it did a good job. And I'm saying that over Freddy or under Freddy versus Jason, just because the gore factor, sure. That movie was mindless and it knew to be mindless. I mean, if you think about it, Freddy only had one kill in that movie.
Used Jason as a pinball machine. So, I mean, come on.
It's perfect. Yeah. You can't go wrong with that.
Oh my God. We need to talk about that movie sometime.
We will, for sure.
Jason Ritter, what are you doing here, man?
Oh, God. Oh, man. I love the kid who's like a stoner kid. It's like Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, it's totally Jay Muse. Anyway.
Yep. Then I'm going to say number four. And the reason why I like number four is because Rennie Harlan did it. And Rennie Harlan was a real up-and-comer at that point. And you could really see some of his film techniques really start to take out. So I appreciated it on that aspect. So I liked four, but I also liked the cockroach kill.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you have number three, the Dream Warriors. Then I have number one because New Nightmare, just with the whole meta feel and making it feel like reality versus fiction, it really stuck out with me over time. It was the vision of what they wanted Frey to be with the trench coat and everything. And like Robert Shea said in the film, how would you like to be in the definitive nightmare? I believe this is it. This is what they wanted all along. Now, is it flawed? Yes. Can you put one on the same column? Yes. But yeah. I think this is the definitive one.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. If you want to put New Nightmare up above number one, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with anybody that wants to go that route.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Well, that wraps it up for flashbacks. I realized at the start of this I did not introduce who was talking, so
they know that's who we my are. Bad.
This is my first one as host of Flashbacks, so I apologize. But I'm Ryan Lutens, and with me is
Jeremy Gechner.
All right, and thank you for joining us. Looking ahead, we have our 500th episode party coming up in Springfield.
That's right.
I'm hoping to be a part of that. And you have a lot of other things being released this October that deals with all things spooky.
Yeah.
So if you looking guys, forward to that.
Yeah, if you guys want to come to that, we'll be at Anvil and Forge on November 8th. It starts at 8 p.m. We'll be doing a little retrospective on our past couple of years of existence. And then we're going to be doing one of Lou Hare's patented brackets. And we're going to be breaking down the best films of the 2010s since we are closing out the decade.
So, yeah, be there. I know I'm going to try as hard as I can, but I got a 2-month-old, so we'll see. And he can hang out at home. He doesn't need me all the time. And lastly, with Flashbacks being back on the market, you can look for us next November as we celebrate an anniversary of a beloved children's classic. It has everything that you could want in it. It's got a little bit of fantasy. It's got a little bit of action. It's got a little bit of horror. And it's got a lot of Macaulay Culkin in a library. I'm talking about the Pagemaster.
Yeah.
So, thank you much.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.